Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Yellowstone kicked off year 5 on Paramount Network 2 weekends ago, with 12.5 million people watching the opening two-hour stanza. Co-star John Emmett Tracy joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Our remaining 60 minutes this day before Thanksgiving is somewhat sporty. It starts with a preview of Barmageddon, USA Network's new celebrity competition that starts next Monday after Monday Night Raw, from executive producer Chris Wagner. From there, we'll check out Good Rivals, a Thanksgiving Day attraction on Prime Video that details and dovetails nicely with the World Cup soccer action inside Qatar. Our guide, executive producer from Skydance Sports, John Weinbach. Also ahead, Fireside makes a big interactive TV turn and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, and our various podcast destinations such as the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Google Podcasts. This just in, it's the day before Thanksgiving 2022, and tomorrow will be televised. Thank you all for joining us on this day before T-Day. Beautiful day here in the Big Apple, 56 degrees at the top of the hour. Who would have expected? Beautiful sunny skies, getting ready for a wonderful Thanksgiving Day tomorrow. Hope yours will be great as well. And we're happy you tuned us in for a special 90-minute edition of the program All About TV's Current and Future. We have a great lineup for you over the next hour and a half, and we invite you to be in the thick of the program. How do you do that? You pick up the phone, you dial in, and you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we'd love to hear you through our chat room as well. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So get in the room, get on the phone. Sooner we do, sooner you'll be involved in the program. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others, wherever they may be, by using Facebook Timeline. Got the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, and other people live with you. Yellowstone co-star John Emmett Tracy joins us live from Vancouver, B.C., after these news notes. And we begin with a big one. Fireside, the interactive video venture launched last fall with media sports entrepreneur Mark Cuban as co-founder, is ready to become a big interactive TV player. According to a Variety report this morning, Fireside will premiere on Amazon Fire TV, Roku, and smart TV set providers in a matter of days, thanks to acquiring cloud-powered platform Strenium for an undisclosed price. In a letter to investors obtained and published by Variety, Fireside co-founder Philan Fatimi, who was on this program a year ago to talk about this service, heralded the smart TV and device launches ahead, critical to positioning the service as a key deliverer of the next generation of media and entertainment. At the moment, consumers can watch and interact with Fireside's content via its website and App Store downloads. We are in communication with Philan to be on the show and coming back to talk about this development and what it will portend for Fireside and interactive TV and TV in general. And we will see if we can try to get her and maybe Mark Cuban on this program over the next few weeks. Now, quickies, Fox and Telemundo scored with their live World Cup soccer coverage Monday. The USA team's first cup game in 8 years, a 1-1 tie with Wales, saw 8.3 million people watch Fox's presentation in English, while 3.4 million caught Telemundo's Spanish-language telecast, which was simulcast on Peacock. Remember, on Friday, we'll be joining you live at 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and we will be joined live from the World Cup in Qatar by Telemundo Deportes President Ray Warren and Executive Vice President Eli Velasquez. That's live from Qatar, Friday, day after Thanksgiving, special time, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow We Televise. Dolu miniseries, The Black Beauty Effect, will unfold Friday on Comcast-owned multi-channel bundle Zumo and Black Experience cable channel. Televisa Univision-owned mega content outlet VIX Plus will grant a second season to La Noche del Zapito, that's Devil's Night. Season 1 finale unspools tomorrow. And it's official. Season 2 of Gordon Ramsay's Next Level Chef will be the post-Super Bowl attraction on Fox February 12th. And that is news notes for today. And now joining us live in an internet radio exclusive from Vancouver, British Columbia, where he is spending Thanksgiving with family and friends, Yellowstone co-star John Emmett Tracy. John, welcome in, and happy Thanksgiving to you and your fellow Yellowstone actors.
Hi, Simon. Thanks a lot, and Thanksgiving to you and to all your listeners. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you on this day before T-Day. John, why do you think Yellowstone, its fifth season, has become more than just a television drama? It's really become a cultural zeitgeist.
You know, it's a great question, and it's a hard one to answer. But I guess I'd have to say, you know, I showed up on the show at the beginning of season three, and I know that season one and two, there was kind of a grassroots conversation about the show, and it was building this loyal fan base. And I think it's the viewers. I think, you know, the loyal fans keep telling people, and it keeps growing and growing. And then, of course, the other thing is the writing. You know, I think that Taylor Sheridan is at the top of his game, and he's absolutely kind of got he's got a grip on, I think, on what speaks to people. And you know, he tells these grand sweeping stories with these macro ideas about, you know, land and heritage and history and tradition. But then at its heart, it's a family story. And I think people do like seeing themselves in characters that they admire, and we all understand a family story. So, you know, it's a show that has a real and, I would say, engaged conversation with its audience, but it's also really entertaining. And I think that combination is quite special.
How does Taylor see the world of Yellowstone? How has he evolved this series over the last 5 years, and certainly in the 2 years you've been on as a co-star?
Well, you know, in one way, I think that anyone who watches the show will know that I think right from the very beginning, Taylor has been interested not just in the present, you know, situation of the people living on this piece of land, but he's frequently gone backwards and looked at, you know, where they came from and how they got there. And those flashbacks were really popular not only with viewers, but I can sort of sense that Taylor enjoys doing them. And and as many people know, they have now led to prequel shows. You know, we've got 1883, that was such a big success, and then 1923 is something that everybody, myself included, are really excited to see. So I think the evolution is sort of, it's interesting, as he moves forward with these characters, he never forgets to look backwards. And I think that's giving people kind of a, you know, a Yellowstone universe, if you will, like this kind of, you know, approach that really considers. And in fact, if you look at the title of the season five premiere, it's called 100 Years is Nothing. You know, and I think officially there have been 7 generations of Duttons in the area, but I think 5 generations across the last 100 years have settled this particular piece of land. And, you know, he's had John Dutton say, who knows if there'll be anybody here in 100 years, you know? And I think it's a really interesting way to look at it, you know? There's all this sound and fury happening, and it's only been 100 years, you know? And that is nothing in sort of geological terms, and, you know, in the land was there, and it will still be there.
And we should point out that Taylor Sheridan's latest thing on Paramount Plus, Tulsa King with Sylvester Stallone, is already off to the races. Terrence Winter, who was on our program way back when he was doing Boardwalk Empire for HBO, is the key creator and co-creator and writer of that series. And I believe 1923, which has Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren, premieres on Paramount Plus next month. I believe, John, we have a call, and we're going to take it. Hello, you're on Survivor Televised. What's your name and where you're calling from? Hello, you're on the air. Hello? All right. Apparently nobody was there. But we'd love to hear from you. So those of you listening, give us a call, 646-652-2906. How has your character been over the course of the 2 years? I understand that you sort of play a sort of a JR type character, sort of one of the villains that's out to cause havoc with Kevin Costner and his character.
Right. You know, it's really it's funny because I obviously right when I came onto the show, I understood that I was kind of in the realm of the antagonists. I think the word villain is such a funny one and such a tricky one because I was pointing out to somebody, we just did the big premiere down in Fort Worth, Texas. We had the whole cast and crew together, and we had a huge celebration down there. And a couple of the cast members were talking about this, and somebody pointed out to me that my character, Ella Steele, is one of the only people on this show that hasn't murdered anybody, including the children on the show who have killed people. So I'm just a guy doing his job. I'm a lawyer going to work, and, you know, you could argue that he and his firm have no business being there. But in the meantime, you know, I guess he's considered the villain. You know, and it's funny because I think antagonists or villains, if you want, to use that term, they are a lot of fun to play, and I think they can be a lot of fun to watch because they're unpredictable. You know, generally we know what the good people are going to do, but we're not so sure with villains. So there's always, you sort of keep one eye on them even when you've got other things to look at. But Andromeda needs conflict, so I know he's there for conflict. But at the end of the day, he's a chief litigator, and he works for Fortune 500 companies, including Market Equities, which is the company that's come into this area and wants to buy the land and develop it. So that's kind of the role he's playing right now. And he's finding, along with his colleagues, that this is a much tougher place to do business than what he had originally expected.
We're speaking with John Emmett Tracy, co-star with Kevin Costner and crew on Yellowstone, which is on Paramount Network now in Season 5, Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. And it's also streamed on Paramount Plus on smart TV sets and smart TV devices as well, wherever you may be. And John is with us live from Vancouver, British Columbia. That's where he's spending Thanksgiving with friends and family. Simon Applebaum with you from the other side of the U.S. of A and Canada. That's New York, where it's 56 degrees at the top of the hour. Happy you're with us on the special day before Thanksgiving 2022 edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And if you have a question or comment for John, make that phone call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, Friday, special day after Thanksgiving edition. We've never done it before, and we're going morning time, so it's breakfast. And we're going to be coming your way with people from the World Cup in Qatar, Telemundo Deportes, or Telemundo Sports President Ray Warren, and Telemundo Deportes Executive Vice President of Sports Content Eli Velasquez. They've been doing a fantastic job so far, along with Fox, in covering the World Cup, which has been absolutely amazing in day number four. Don't forget, later that day, we will have England and USA in their second matches, head-to-head with each other. That is at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, on Fox and on Telemundo, with pre-game shows, I believe it's at 1 o'clock or 1:30, on both services. And don't forget, the Telemundo coverage is also presented simulcast on Peacock, available on smart TV sets and smart devices through NBC Universal. And also on the program, we're going to offer this question. What should TV viewers be thankful for this Thanksgiving? That'll be in our second half hour, and we'll give you an opportunity to weigh in on that question with your own answers. That's all Friday. Remember the special time, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So, John, how has your antagonistic character evolved first over the last two seasons and currently with this one?
Well, you know, as I was as I touched on just a moment ago, I think when he arrived in Montana from New York, he's from New York like you are, Simon. He was sort of using his tried and true big city kind of corporate tactics and strategies, and it didn't take him long to realize that, you know, Montana is more than a place. You know, it's kind of a way of life, and the way that people there do business is very different. And I think it's safe to say that he and his company completely underestimated, you know, the people that live there and the way of life in general. So how has he evolved? I think we saw him learning that lesson in season three and trying some different tactics in season four. And now in season five, I think, you know, as one of the characters, Caroline Warner, played wonderfully by Jackie Weaver, says, you know, the gloves are off and no rules at this point. So I think stronger obstacles require stronger tactics, and that's the evolution. I think, you know, people who will have seen, I don't want to give any spoilers, but who will have seen episode three that just aired on Sunday, they'll see that Market Equities is really stepping up their game, and we're going to try to sort of fight fire with fire.
Have you found a partner in crime in Caroline as a character?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's interesting because Ellis, as I said, got there at the beginning of season three with one set of bosses that followed behind once. You know, he was sort of the first boots on the ground, and then eventually we had, you know, his bosses come in. But, you know, leaders fall and rise, as the show pointed out, and so then season four he had a different boss, and now season five he's still working with Caroline Warner, but we've brought in another. You know, Don Oliveri plays a fantastic character that I think people people are all talking about now, because she's clearly going to be a problem for the Duttons, and she's kind of our, I guess, fixer. You know, she comes in. So I've had a couple of partners in crime, but I will tell you, absolutely, to work with Jackie Weaver and Dawn. I mean, all of them. It's been a great. Sometimes you go to work, you know, and you're sitting there with Kevin Costner on one side of you and Jackie Weaver on the other, and you sort of, you know, you can't believe it. You're getting to work with these incredible people at the top of their game.
If this question was not asked, yours truly would be crucified by our listeners. What is it like to either act alongside Kevin Costner or watch him act, watch him be the character of John Dutton?
It's fantastic. I mean, it's one of the great parts of the job. I mean, like anyone, I'm a movie fan, and I've been going to the movies since I was a kid, and, you know, always enjoy Kevin. You know, he's a legend, right? You know, he's a legend, and you sort of feel that when he walks on set. And I want to be clear, it doesn't mean he kind of, you know, expects special treatment. In fact, just the opposite. He's very soft-spoken. He has a great sense of humor. He definitely, sinks into this character, though. I think that anyone who's seen him interviewed, you'll understand the register of his voice is different. His sort of outlook is brighter when you're talking to him. John Dutton has the weight of the world on his shoulders, and that's the character that Kevin plays. So, yeah, to watch him sink into that is fascinating. And he's a very spare actor in the sense that he doesn't put a lot of unnecessary, superfluous, activity into his work. He lets the words and the intention speak for themselves. So it's always a lesson when you get to watch a great actor work. And, you know, we did a scene at the end of season three where there were 10 principal actors, all of us with dialogue in this scene. And which means it's a long day. It means you're going to have to cover this again and again and again and keep filming it. And he had all the dialogue, really, most of it, I should say, and he just nailed it again and again and again. And he seems to really enjoy doing it. So I'll answer your question. It's like a masterclass, you know, to watch him work.
Along the road in your TV career before Yellowstone, you've played quite a few, if not antagonist, villainous, whatever you want to call it, parts. I understand that you have had a very interesting set of roles with the CW on some of their hit shows like Supernatural and Smallville and Batwoman and iZombie. When you get these kind of anti-hero, antagonistic, or villain roles, no matter where the show comes from or who the creator is or the network it's on or service it's on, how do you try to make the character fresh? How do you try to make it stand out and maybe even bring a quality that the viewer doesn't expect from the character?
Yeah, I love that question, Simon. It starts, once again, with the writing and what the character's there for. And so, you know, in acting we call it the objective. They all have something that they're trying to do, and they certainly don't see themselves usually as villainous. You know, they've got something that they're fighting for, and you know, they don't always make the best decisions. But the real answer to your question is you hang on to that kind of, you know, rope or that kite string or whatever it is of what this character really, really wants and what they believe they're doing. And because these characters are all unique from one another, then ideally and hopefully the performances end up being, unique from one another. For example, you mentioned the CW shows. When I worked on Batwoman, I played a man who was just trying to look out for his son. Now, he did that in very destructive ways, ultimately, but that's what he thought he was doing. And I think, you know, when you watch antagonists or villains, one of the great things about them is that all of us as viewers, it gives us something in common. You know, it gives us someone to fight against. We feel a sense of community because we all hate this guy. So a lot of times if I go to work and I'm playing the guy that they're meant to hate, you know, we can't have drama without conflict, and it's an honor to be part of the once upon a time storytelling. So, you know, you keep them unique by what it is that they're fighting for, I guess is the short answer.
Mm-hmm. Yellowstone is in the thick of season 5, Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on Paramount Network. Then it's also carried on Paramount Plus, available on smart TV sets and smart devices. Co-star John Emma Tracy is with us live this half hour from Vancouver, British Columbia, here on this day before Thanksgiving edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum here live from New York, 56 degrees at the top of the hour, wishing all of you a wonderful Thanksgiving and start of your holiday season, and hope it's great starting tomorrow. If you are leaving, by the way, to go somewhere in time for tomorrow night or tomorrow afternoon, please take extra time. Call your carrier. Call AAA to find out what's going on with the highways and the byways and the planes and so forth and the trains so that you can get to your destination on time or close. And if you have a question or comment for John and in our many moments with him, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, two of the guests who were supposed to be on this past Monday are going to be with us for sure. From ABC's The Great Christmas Life Fight that begins its 10th season that night, executive producer Brady Connell on the same day, exclusive interview. And from Fine Art Auction Channel, one of the more unique new services to appear on smart TV sets and devices in quite a long time, Vice President Mark Bronson. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, our regular time, right here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And by the way, coming up our next half hour, we're going live to Los Angeles, and we're going to speak with the executive producer of the new USA Network series that will be going on after Monday Night Raw in a couple of weeks, called Barmageddon, Chris Wagner. Also in our next half hour, our new classic trivia question. We have two big CD collections in store for you, and if you're first with the correct answer by email, you can have those prizes, and hopefully a great holiday season gift for you or people you love. That's coming up in our next half hour. John, I understand that you were in a show that was really turned out to be a groundbreaker for television a number of years ago, The Man in the High Castle, one of the first genre series to deal with an alternative Earth, where what if the Nazis had won World War II? What would life be like on this planet? What was it like doing that series?
Yes, I was only on it briefly, I must say. I only spent a couple of days as a guest star on that show. But one of the things I noticed immediately when I got there is that the level of creativity, it's always quite high, you know, when you make a television show. The people that make these shows are massive professionals who have done incredible things prior to getting to them usually. But on this show, because they were creating a world that might have been, you know, it was a hypothetical world, I found that the sort of creativity quotient, you know, the interpretive quotient as well, went way up. And so everything from the props department to the wardrobe to the writing, you know, and the direction, it was a fascinating place because it was a world that we're not really supposed to recognize, but we still have to see ourselves in it. So again, yeah, I was only there the 1 week, but I really had a great time. I loved working on it. I loved working with the technicians and the sort of designers that created everything. And the look of the show, for those of your listeners who've seen it, they know it's just this incredible potential world, and I thought that they really did a great job.
Mm-hmm. John, you're one of those actors who doesn't want to get wedded or tied to one medium. You do television, you do film, you even do voiceovers on video games, you do theater. How do you try to balance the kind of acting life you have?
Yeah, it's funny because I started acting when I was really young. I mean, I was a kid when I decided this is what I was going to do, and then everything I pursued from that point forward was pointing in the same direction. So, you know, it started with theater and some early commercials and some things like that. And you kind of get used to a freelance balancing act. If we're lucky as actors, it starts to get difficult. You know, if you start to get busy, then you find you can't take, you know, 2 months to go do a play. But you want to, you know, you kind of enjoy it. And I should also say they feel very different from one another. You know, a rehearsal room in a theater project is like base camp, you know, where you can sit and dig into your character and spend a lot of time, you know, working and developing it. And like theater, film has a, you know, beginning, middle, and end. And when you come to work on day one, you already know how your character is going to end, for example, or where this is going to go. In fact, you might be going to work the first day filming your final scene. What has been great about working more and more in television is, in some ways, it's a lot more like real life because you don't know what's going to happen when that next script comes. You know, you're playing your character as he or she is today, and you're sort of moving forward. But like life, we don't know what's around the corner. So sometimes you open a script and you see that your character doesn't make it through this episode, or, you know. So I think the answer is I just enjoy the experience of the different, you know, mediums. It's each one feels unique to one another. Even though, you know, film and TV are both on camera, you move at a different pace with television. You have to go much faster, and you do a lot more pages of script per day, whereas film, you can slow down and take your time. And then theater, you can really slow down. As for video games, I was in Assassin's Creed 3 and a couple of the sort of spin-off games from that, and I played Thomas Jefferson, and that was fascinating because it was full motion capture and facial recognition and voice capture live. So I've never done anything like that prior to that, so it was a really cool experience to just, you know, get to act in a new way and in a different form.
Any plans for you and your family to watch television tomorrow or through the Thanksgiving weekend? A lot of good shows are happening. Of course, you got the parade, Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade tomorrow. You got the football, college and pro. You have quite a few interesting shows that are running on various networks. And today we have Wednesday, the new Addams Family spinoff from Netflix with Jenna Ortega playing that classic role, but in a very different way with Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia and Luis Guzman as Gomez. And I've seen some clips from the opening episode that Tim Burton directed. And I'll tell you, I think this is Netflix, I think, has got a big winner in this show.
Absolutely. Super excited for that. I definitely want to tune into that. We will watch the parade. That's kind of a tradition for a lot of people, and it is for us also. We're also deeply into, you know, Disney Plus's Star Wars universe, and I think I might get this wrong, but I believe that the final episode of this season of Andor drops tomorrow or today. I'm not sure. So my whole family and I are kind of we're hooked into that, and yeah, and then there'll probably be a lot of eating and a lot of napping. That'll be the rest of our day tomorrow.
Yes, and also today or tomorrow, ABC is running the first two episodes of Andor at the same time that the final episode is running on Disney Plus. And
okay,
I believe
either
Freeform or another ABC network will, or Disney-owned network will also carry, and Hulu will carry the first two episodes of Andor as well. So.
And how about you, Simon? What will you be watching tomorrow?
The parade, some obviously football, both pro and hopefully some college on either Fox or CBS, and hopefully some college football on ESPN. And then over the weekend, I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to Ohio State, Michigan tomorrow, Saturday at noon on ABC. That is going to be some game.
So it sounds like a lot of TV this weekend for you.
Yeah, and let's not forget also Friday, I hope to catch a little bit of England, USA on either Fox or TV.
Yes, of course.
I think the coverage of the World Cup has been just fantastic on both services. Alrighty, so now you have a sense of the menu that both of us have. Yellowstone, next episode, this Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on the Paramount Network. Check your locals for where it's available in your area on cable and satellite. Don't forget the episodes are also presented later on Paramount Plus. They have on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. More details about the service online and more details about Yellowstone online. There's www.paramountnetwork.com and paramountplus.com. There's www.paramountnetwork.com and paramountplus.com. Yellowstone, next episode, Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. John, Emmett, Tracy, thank you so much for coming on. All the best to you, Kevin, Taylor, the rest of the cast and crew for a wonderful Thanksgiving and a great rest of your fifth season and many, many more. It's been a delight having you on.
Thank you, Simon. I really enjoyed it. And happy Thanksgiving to your listeners and to you. And it's been a pleasure being here. And thanks for those people who are watching the show. It means a lot to everyone who makes it. And we wouldn't be there if they weren't watching. So thank you all.
You're very, very welcome, John. And to you and your family and friends, all the greatest for a wonderful Thanksgiving and holiday season. Take care.
Bye-bye.
John Emmett Tracy joining us live from Vancouver, British Columbia this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Coming up in our next half hour, Live to Los Angeles we go, and we'll speak with the executive producer of Barmageddon. It's coming your way on USA Network next month after Monday Night Raw. Also, our latest classic trivia question, where we have, which, by the way, is dealing with Wednesday, the character of Wednesday, we should say, in tribute to the Netflix show that premiered earlier today. And if you're first correct answer, we have two wonderful CD music collections coming your way just right for this holiday season. And in our final half hour, top of the hour, we'll be joined by the executive producer of the new Prime Video series that premieres tomorrow, Good Rivals, John Weinbach. Excuse me. Before we get to all that, let's pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, tune.com. Together, we reach over 75 million listeners around the world every month and growing. What are you thankful for? Well, BTR raises that question in a very unique special tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. What are you thankful for? That's tonight, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And don't forget, BTR you can always find on YouTube, which is now available more and more on smart TV sets and devices. Welcome back to our second half hour of this 90-minute, day before Thanksgiving 2022 edition of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Albon with you live from New Weber, New York, 56 degrees, the bottom of the hour. Really, we didn't expect it to be that warm, but it's amazing. Beautiful sunny skies, sun about to go down here in the Big Apple. And we have a great pair of guests coming your way over the next hour, so we invite you to be part of the program if you're just joining us. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. A very unusual sporting hour is coming your way on USA Network starting on December 5th. It'll be on 11 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time right after Monday Night Raw. It's called Barmageddon, and here to talk about it live from Los Angeles, executive producer Chris Wagner. Chris, welcome in. Happy pre-Thanksgiving to you.
Hey, Sammy. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. Oh, we're almost there.
Yep, we're almost there, and your new show is almost there. Tell us all about it.
It's a fun show. It's one of those shows that everybody behind the camera, in front of the camera, just had an authentic good time. And what it is, it's taking bar games that we all know, like cornhole and throwing axes, etc., like puts them on steroids, blows it up, and we do it at Blake's Bar, Old Red in Nashville. And just Blake called a lot of his friends. You know, obviously Gwen Stefani, Jay Farrell, Sheryl Crow, Jimmy Johnson, Laurel, you know, a very diverse group of very big names to come down, have fun. And it was just such an opportunity to see talent in such a different way, like genuinely enjoying themselves, playing against each other. And then you see Gwen and Sheryl jump up on stage and sing together. So I'm really excited for it. It's an opportunity for co-viewing. I can watch it with my mom or my kids, and everybody gets it, and everybody will have a good time.
Blake, of course, being Blake Shelton, a country music superstar, of course, one of the people behind The Voice. And in fact, the host of The Voice, Carson Daly, is also a co-host on the show. And you also, given the fact that it is on right after Monday Night Raw, you've got one of the Hall of Famers of WWE, the wonderful Nikki Bella.
I can't say enough good things about all of them. Like, they're the kind of people, the kind of talent you dream of working with. Not only, as you said, are Blake and Carson executive producers, so they're just invested as much behind the camera as they were in front. And Nikki couldn't be sweeter, and she just fit in so easily and seamlessly that she dealt with those guys, she dealt with everyone, and, like, just handled herself so well. And everybody had such a good time, and everybody is so cool. So, which it's just refreshing to be in that kind of environment where, like you said, the talent can be bigger names, but they're enjoying themselves. They're thanking the cameramen before they shoot. Like, it was such a great experience.
Mm. How did this show come about? How did Blake and Carson come up with the idea? And then how did you enter the picture?
Yeah. So Blake and Carson, I think, were having a beer, talking shop, playing cornhole and thinking about doing a cornhole show, and called our mutual friend, Lee Metzger, said they had that idea. And he's like, let me try something else. Really put a pen to paper and develop this out, and sold it and called me to work with him, where white label is basically gives all the buyers the same confidence as all the big companies do. But it's, you know, a much less price because we have streamlined overhead and don't focus on development. So NBC approved us, and we started. And this whole process started actually about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Talk about what going into the picking the games that are going to be in. As you mentioned, there's cornhole, but there's also some very interesting games I did not know were being put on bars around the country. Was there a lot of – did you and your production crew do a lot of research, or Blake do a lot of research in terms of going to local bars in his neck of the woods, or Carson in his neck of the woods to figure out what kind of games would be adaptable for a television show like this?
Well, good or bad, I think it organically came to all the guys on the team, guys and girls, I should say, excuse me. You know, it's like ping pong, but it's called ping pong, and it's a 4 foot tall ping pong paddle with three holes in it. And what's cool too is, like, as I just mentioned, Blake and Carson were just as invested behind the camera. We tested all the games here in Glendale, and like that alone was a hoot. And Blake and Carson would come down. They'd play them. They'd test them. They'd give their opinion. They'd give their feedback. So, like, it truly, when you see it, it truly is the mastermind of Blake, Carson, and Lee.
Mm-hmm. Barmageddon is the new celebrity game show put together by Blake Sheldon, by Carson Daly, and by our guest, executive producer, Chris Wagner. He joins us live in Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, day after Thanksgiving 2022 edition, live from Nueva York, where yours truly, Simon Applebaum, is. And don't forget that Barmageddon will be kicking off on December 5th. That's a Monday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, right after WWE Monday Night Raw. If you have a question or comment for Chris, bring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. This is the third of our three-episode triple header that we do Thanksgiving week. This is our fourth year doing it, and we're delighted to have you along for the ride. We have a nice 90-minute show for you. We have another great guest coming your way after the top of the hour. But don't forget, Friday, for the very first time in our 15-plus years on the air, we are going live the day after Thanksgiving, and we're doing our first morning edition at the same time. 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, we're going live to the World Cup in Qatar, and we will be joined by the folks behind Telemundo's coverage, which is doing great, and simulcast on Peacock. We will have the head of Telemundo Deportes, Telemundo Sports, Ray Warren, and Executive Vice President Eli Velasquez. Again, they will be live with us from Qatar, and we'll talk to them about the upcoming England-USA match, which will be on at 2 p.m. Eastern Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, on both Fox and Telemundo, Fox in English, Telemundo in Spanish, also simulcast on Peacock in Spanish as well. And what else Telemundo Deportes has in store for the rest of this year and 2023. That's coming your way, special time and day, Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, live to Qatar, right here, exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. So, Chris, explain how the game works. Actually, there's five games in each episode.
Correct. And it's broken down by rounds. There's a wheel that you spin at the each of one, and it can end up to – in order. So if you lose, you can spin the wheel, and it's called the Wheel of Redemption. And you could end up on, like, you know, bar shots, which is truly just that bar water that you see under the black rubber on the bar. Put in shot glass, you have to drink that. You have to drink Rocky Mountain oysters, So, and then in the end, it's based on points, and it's just such a fun time. And truly, all the celebrities that came on had such a blast. Again, which is just one of those refreshing moments in TV that you're excited to be a part of.
And are all the games presented each episode, or do you rotate the games around depending on who's playing?
So we rotated them, and it wasn't depending on how much who was playing, excuse me, as much it was, you know, we shot at Blake's Real Bar, Old Red in Nashville, on Broadway. So the energy from – we had a live audience, so that energy alone was second to none. But the key to how we pulled it off successfully, working in a real practical bar, was the games had to be designed while still maintaining the creative, but in order to fit in certain spots so that we could shoot on – the first floor of the bar and the third floor of the bar in one day, and then move to the second floor and the first floor the next day. So it was very much this Rubik's Cube, which was a challenge, but again, everybody pulled off, and Blake, Carson, and Nikki did it with a smile on some long days.
What was the toughest game to pull off?
That's a really interesting question. I think cornhole was, because I have to imagine you know what regular cornhole is. Well, what we did is supersized the board. We used a T-shirt gun and decorated the gun itself as a corn on the cob to shoot out kernels. So it was something that was easy in nature and certainly in thought. But the practicality of, like, determining the right speed, distance, et cetera, it became almost like an engineering project versus just a fun bar game. So I'd say that was one of the challenges.
You mentioned cornhole a couple of times. Why has this game become a near national pastime? It's really over the last 2 years, through shows like this, through ESPN's coverage of the American Cornhole League, especially, you know, in the thick of the pandemic and now afterward. It just seems that this, like pickleball, has become sort of the new sensation for people to do.
Right. I think it's so fun. Like, I have it set up in my backyard. I think any athletic ability, any age can play it, and it brings that spirit of competition at the most simple level. It's just so fun. It's so easy. It's inexpensive to put out and just start right away. There's no setup. I think the simplicity and the attractiveness to all ages and genders makes it just a fun, simple family sport.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that the pairings are really, and you mentioned earlier, really quite unique. Gwen Stefani, Sheryl Crow, you can sort of see that. You also have a wrestling pair. You got Sasha Banks, former WWE champion, with Brie Bella,
yep.
Also a former WWE, I think,
yep.
The solo or tag team champion. You've got the comedian Jay Farrow up against Martin Covey. We all remember him, of course, from the Karate Kid movies and now Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Trace Atkins, another country music superstar, is up against the coach of the Tennessee Titans. Mike Vable, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, exactly right.
That had to be a very interesting pairing. You know, country music star versus star coach in the National Football League.
I know, right? It really worked out that way. A lot of thought went into it, like who would be fun to watch, who would play well together, because really the spirit of it was authenticity. And creatively, it worked out really well because they did play fun together. They genuinely enjoyed each other. They just had a really good time. And, yeah, I'm hopeful that it gets picked up and excited to see who we get next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand that every one of the players is playing for somebody who is an internet star. How did that idea come about?
It was just another fun way to add a different element to the game. And so what it is, like, you know, there's a company called Jukin Media that really, really made its success off fun videos. And so there's a lot of, I don't want to say fail videos, but some videos like those OMG moments where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that happened. Oh my gosh, I can't believe he did that. So it was kind of a fun way to redeem themselves. I.e. when two buddies are fishing and he goes to cast his fishing pole and it sticks into his buddy's neck. Like if he won, his prize was a new set of fishing rods. It was just another fun way that's authentic to Blake, Carson, and Lee of to add another level to the game. And it was so fun to see. And the talent, the celebrities, you know, everybody hung out with each other and with the YouTube stars as if they were old friends and had genuinely just a lot of fun with each other. It was cool to see. It's like you see those moments in front of the TV that are so magic that transcend to the viewer. It's impossible not to smile, to laugh, and feel that energy.
What was the atmosphere like with you and the production crew in Nashville taping these episodes?
Oh, my gosh. It was epic. You know, Nashville itself obviously has this energy. And then to be on Broadway and with real fans of some of these country stars or actors, everybody had as much fun behind the camera as they did in front of the camera. And, you know, Blake, Carson, Nikki, who are the constant through the whole process, they treat everyone kindly and with respect and, you know, go and thank the cameraman after the shoot. So, like, it was one of those shows that everybody had such a good time. And it's one of those shows that you're just so hopeful that it does transcend to the audience so that there'll be future seasons.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Chris Wagner. He is the executive producer of Barmageddon. It's USA Network's new celebrity game from Nashville with Blake Shelton, Carson Daly, and Nikki Bella as co-hosts. Also, Shelton and Carson Daly are also co-executive producers as well. And Chris joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised on this day before Thanksgiving 2022. Barmageddon will premiere on Monday, December 5th, 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time, right after WWE Monday Night Raw. And if a question or comment on any notes with Chris, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04, my name. Coming up before the top of the hour, our new classic trivia question, which celebrates the premiere of Wednesday earlier today for Netflix. That's the new Addams Family offshoot show. I've seen clips of it. It looks great, with Jenna Ortega in what I think is going to be a star-making turn as the famous Charles Addams cartoon character in real life, but in some very interesting ways. And also has Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia Addams and Louis Guzman as Gomez. The show premiered earlier today. Tim Burton is one of the executive producers. He's also the director of the opening episode and a few others as well. And again, that's running on Netflix. And our classic trivia question is a tribute to that new series. So stay tuned for that. You could win two wonderful CD collections, just perfect for this holiday season, if you are first emailing the correct answer. And then in our final half hour, after the top of the hour, we will speak with the executive producer of a show timed beautifully with the World Cup happening in Qatar. The show is called Good Rivals. It's a three-part documentary series about the long-running rivalry between the U.S. and Mexico men's soccer teams. John Weinbach is the executive producer for Skydance Sports, and he will join us to talk about that, plus what else is going on at Skydance, including a reaction to the recent deal last week with the National Football League for new scripted and unscripted shows with Skydance. So John Weinbach will be joining us in our final half hour. Chris, is the WWE going to do any cross-promotion with your show to bring in viewers?
I hope so. It seems like such a nice organic way to do it, especially when we have the WWE stars on. So I think we're really hopeful that they do. And right now I'm seeing billboards around town. So it certainly feels like a property that NBCU is behind.
Now, your show is going on at 11 o'clock Eastern Pacific after Monday Night Raw. Is USA also giving you a primetime slot or other slots that people can discover the show if they don't watch Monday Night Raw?
Yeah, I mean, 11 p.m. East, but my understanding is 8 p.m. Western. So I hope that it achieves the family co-viewing that it's capable of and we all want it to.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the other games, by the way? I saw in the promo for Barmageddon that all these games are very larger than life if you want to have like a uniform deal between the games. But some of these other games are like target games that are really, I mean, again, very larger than life, but very family friendly.
Yeah, in the names itself, my favorite ones are cornhole, as I've mentioned a few times, drunken axe hole, so it's basically axe throwing with the axes aren't real, with drunk goggles on, so you can barely see, like as if someone had drinking a few beers, and then king pong, which is, you know, 4 foot long ping pong. You have a ping pong machine shooting them out rapidly, and you have 4 foot tall ping pong paddles trying to hit it into a cup on the other side of the net. Those were my three favorite. They're just so fun. Visually, it's fun to see people play it, and they're all games or things that we've certainly heard of, if not all been to.
Yeah. In England, one of the most popular sports in bars that's also become a national pastime is darts. Was there any thought about doing a dart game on Barmageddon?
We played with a few different options. but I think you'll see it next time.
Any other games, if you
hopefully
go to a second season, that you didn't do this time around that you might do for season two?
There's a ton. They've already started, you know, Blake and Carson are obviously friends. Lee is a friend of theirs. Lee is the one who brought White Label into it. They're already fooling around with new ideas. So, again, super hopeful it gets a second season because it's a new opportunity to see some other traditional games in a very fun way.
What did you do before coming to Barmagan? Did you do game shows? Did you do other kinds of unscripted programming? What was it like, you know, bringing that all that experience to Barmagan?
Yeah, I've had the good fortune. You know, I've been in this business for 23 years now and really have had the good fortune to do every genre, game shows being one of my favorites. And this is really a game show meets reality. And there's almost a variety element because Blake performs every show. And, you know, you get Gwen Stefani and Sheryl Crow hopping up on stage together. So I've done all those. So it was nice to be able to kind of bring the experience of multiple genres into one show. And it's just, it's something that genuinely everyone had so much fun. And I think the audience will see that.
What are some of the game shows that you've done in the past?
Yeah, so Are You Smarter Than the Fifth Grader? I did a few seasons of the primetime one. I did two seasons of the syndicated one where we shot 250 episodes a year. The biggest one that I was really proud of is a show called Million Second Quiz for NBC during the Olympics. Gosh, I think it was 2012, where we took over an old Mercedes Benz dealership right by the Lincoln Tunnel. We turned the whole building into a place for the contestants to sleep because it was a 24-hour game. It's a 24-hour game online, 23-hour game online. And then every night for 12 nights straight, it was live on the rooftop with Ryan Seacrest hosting for NBC itself. And it was the size, the scale, the game itself. It was just something epic that, you know, very few people get to be a part of in their career. And I was fortunate enough to do it. And it was in New York as well during hurricane season. So like there were so many things working against us and we were able to pull it off. So that's the biggest one I'm proud of.
That was an incredible show. I saw many of the episodes on NBC Live and we talked about
it
on this program a lot. It was win, lose, or draw. It was an incredible experiment for NBC to do. You know, both the live primetime hour, but also the you know, having a 24-hour game show for more than a week was just incredible.
It was just something, you know, all the odds were against us in pulling it off. And the fact that it worked and Paul Telegdy at the time picked it up and believed in it, it was an epic event to be a part of.
Hopefully somebody might try it again. I think now that we have, for example, smart TV sets and smart devices that allow viewers to watch and use the television set using their voice, whether it's artificial intelligence in the set through Siri or Alexa or Google Assistant, et cetera, I think that kind of a show could actually do even better and be more interactive with the studio contestants too. And one thing about Are You Smarter Than the Fifth Grader, wonderful show. I got to ask, what was it like working with Jeff Foxworthy? He just didn't even come across as a natural as a game show host.
Oh, my God. You talk about, you know, talk about the Blake Shelton's, Carson's, Nicky's, who are just genuine, nice people. Jeff is everything you see. He is the nicest, kindest, normal dude. You know, like for lunch, he'd want Chick-fil-A. He showed up in jeans and a T-shirt. Like he was just so casual, but such a pro. I mean, the guy is so smart, so buttoned up, such a professional. And he actually reminds me of Ryan Seacrest in that regard, and couldn't be kinder. And is very much a family man. His daughter worked on the show one season, so he was great. I would love the opportunity to work with him again.
So while you wait for Barmagan to go on the air in a couple of weeks on USA Network and see how that goes, what other things are you and your production company, White Label, working on?
Yeah, so White Label, we just did Rihanna's fashion show, Savage X Fenty. Right now we're doing a Backstreet Boys Christmas special for ABC. And we've got some really big shows coming up in 2023 that we're excited to announce. But right now we're doing that. We did something called Unicorn Hunters with Craig Plestis. We've kind of been doing just every genre and servicing every buyer. We're doing a lot with Viacom right now as well. So we've been so fortunate, and just kind of confirms with me or reconfirms with me the need for white label in this space.
Mm-hmm. Born Again, hosted by Blake Shelton, Carson Daly, and WWE Hall of Famer Nikki Bella, premieres a week from Monday, December 5th on USA Network, 11 p.m. Eastern time. It might be either 11 p.m. Eastern or 8 p.m. Pacific time, right after WWE Monday Night Raw on the USA Network. Check locally where USA is available in the area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to usanetwork.com. That's usnetwork.com. Born Again premieres December 5th. That's a Monday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, at either 8 p.m. or 11 p.m. Eastern, Pacific time. And again, it will all follow WWE's latest episode of Monday Night Raw live. Chris Wagner, the executive producer of Barmageddon, thank you for joining us. Congratulations to you and your crew for getting it on the air, hopefully a week from Monday, beginning of a great long run. And to you and everybody at White Label, production crew and talent, have a wonderful Thanksgiving and a great Christmas holiday season ahead.
I really appreciate you taking the time to have me on. Much love to you and your family, and have a great holiday. Thank you so much.
Thank you very, very much, Chris. A pleasure. Same to you. Take care. All the greatest.
Same. Take care.
Chris Wagner from Barmageddon joining us live from Los Angeles. And now it's time for our classic trivia question that we introduced on yesterday's program. And if you're first with the correct answer, we have two wonderful CD music collections just perfect for this holiday season. TV Guide, 50 all-time favorite TV themes, which is a year-by-year celebration of some of the best TV themes around, from Dragnet to The Honeymooners, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, MASH, Jefferson's, Muppet Show, NYPD Blue, Mad About You, 16 Under, all, or many of them, using the original soundtrack of the theme. And for all you Fred Astaire musical fans out there, it's Fred Astaire's collection, Let's Face the Music and Dance, including many of his hits from those movies with Ginger Rogers and others, like The Way You Look Tonight, Putting on the Ritz, Shall We Dance, Isn't This a Lovely Day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Let's Face the Music and Dance. And both of these wonderful CD music collections can be yours if you know the answer to this question. Remember, we are doing it in honor of Wednesday, the new Netflix series that premiered earlier today, starring Jenna Ortega as that Charles Adams cartoon character brought to life in a very different and new way. Executive produced by Tim Burton, who directed the opening episode and other episodes as well, and also starring Catherine Zeta-Jones as Morticia Adams and Louis Guzman as Gomez Adams. I've seen the clips from this show from the opening episode, and I'll tell you something, Andy. Jenna Ortega is one of the breakout stars of this year. This show will definitely put her in star power mode. And here's the question. Who played Wednesday on the original Addams Family television series, 1960s on ABC? Who played Wednesday on the Addams Family television series? We're talking about the original one in the 1960s on ABC. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if you're first with the correct answer, you will win our pair of great CD music collections. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we'll post the question Thanksgiving morning, if need be, on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. We're looking for our second weekly winner in a row, and it could be you if you know the correct answer. Again, the question, who played Wednesday on the Addams Family television series in the 1960s on ABC? By the way, if you're a previous winner or guest, you're not eligible. So get in the game today, and all the very best. Remember, in order to win, you've got to play in, so do so. And, of course, happy Thanksgiving. When we come back, we're going live again to Los Angeles, and this time we're going to be speaking with John Weinbach. He is the executive producer of the new Prime Video sports-oriented miniseries premiering tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day. It's called Good Rivals, and if you are a fan of soccer and the World Cup, I think you'll really enjoy what Prime Video is unleashing tomorrow. It's all about the rivalry, a very long one, and sometimes heated, between the U.S. and Mexico men's national team. John will join us from L.A. after we pause at the bottom, top of the hour, at top of the hour, for web identification. This is the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, spooky.com, and tune.com. Together, reach over 75 minutes around the world every month and growing. Crossroads Sports Radio is on tonight. We'll give you a great preview of all the Thanksgiving sports attractions tomorrow and throughout the weekend. NFL, college football, hockey, basketball, and a whole lot more. And, of course, the World Cup soccer action, including the big game on Friday between England and the United States. That'll be starting at 2 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on Fox in English, Telemundo in Spanish. That's Crossroads Sports Radio today, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, BTR will have a lot of great shows for you live and recorded for your Thanksgiving Day and Thanksgiving weekend pleasure. So check it out at blogtalkradio.com. That's www.blogtalkradio.com. Spreaker and TuneIn Radio will also have wonderful shows for you as well. Go to Spreaker.com and TuneIn Radio or TuneIn.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of this 90-minute day before Thanksgiving 2022 edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, the Pro and Wombat TV's current and future. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 54 degrees at the top of the hour. We welcome those who are just joining us at the top of the hour. Wonderful guests for you in the half hour ahead. So be part of the program. Give us a call. The number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway, or catch us across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, or TuneIn Radio. And we've got our chat room business for you, so use it. SimonApple04 is the chat room name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/tellloveeyes. And while the promo is on the air, you can have others connect with you by using Facebook Timeline. You've got the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn screen, follow the instructions, and other people will be live with you. And now joining us live from Los Angeles, the executive producer of the new Prime Video documentary series, Good Rivals, John Weinbach. John, welcome in. Happy Thanksgiving season to you and yours.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
It is a pleasure. The timing of this couldn't be better. You got the World Cup going on. It's been a great watch so far in the 4 days it's been on. Of course, we got England and the U.S. in their big match on Friday. And this deals with an equally heated rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's kind of a professional and personal dream come true to make the project. I'm a long-time soccer fanatic. I'm old enough, I'm 46, to remember when you had to defend being an American soccer fan. And thankfully, that's not the case. And our partners at Amazon agreed. And, you know, we're at a stage where we should be proud as Americans, as a region, to tell our story and that it has global relevance and it deserves to be told on a global platform. So enormously exciting. I'll be incredibly emotional and nervous. I'm nervous right now. I'm still, you know, recovering from from the first game against Wales for the U.S. But yes, the timing set up really nicely. I'm not a television programmer, but I would predict that the U.S. England game tomorrow will probably be the highest rated, certainly men's soccer game ever.
Very well could be. And of course, Fox and Telemundo will carry it live at 2 p.m. Eastern and 11 a.m. Pacific time. And again, for those who just come in, we will be with you on Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, and we will have, live from Qatar and the World Cup, we will have Ray Warren, the president of Telemundo Deportes, that's Telemundo Sports, who's doing a great job so far covering the World Cup along with Fox, and Eli Velasquez, Telemundo Deportes, executive vice president of sports content. Again, that's live this Friday, our first ever morning edition in our 15-plus year history. And it's also our first day after Thanksgiving edition. That's Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. And this is a big deal for you because you're one of the executive producers of Skydance Sports, and this is one of your first projects. How did it get to be that way?
It is our first project that's actually making air as Skydance Sports, which is really fantastic. The project came together quite quickly and in a kind of a great way. It originated with John Skipper, who obviously was the president of ESPN, and he launched a new company called Meadowlark Media. And the woman who oversees unscripted content for him is a great executive named Deirdre Fenton, who I had known for years. And we were actually talking about a different project. She told me, hey, you know, we're doing this project about looking at the project about the U.S.-Mexico rivalry. John, you know, are you a soccer fan? And I'm a soccer fanatic. And she said, look, do you know about U.S. soccer? And I said, you know, maybe aside from my own kids' teams and the Lakers, I think I might be more, you know, fanatical about the U.S. national team than anything. This is a subject very close to my heart. I grew up in Southern California, playing not only with Mexican players, but playing the game. Having followed, certainly, you know, not just international soccer, but the U.S. soccer since really the dark ages of American soccer, in the mid-'80s when we did not have a professional outdoor league. The only thing we had was an indoor soccer league. But because there was a real cohort of early American stars, and even to this day, a lot of players from Southern California, and many of them who went to UCLA, I got to see them. So this is something that was a quite personal project for me because it was sort of living my own fandom of the game. And you know, so when we those initial conversations with Deirdre, which was, you know, really in October of 21, we went at it, you know, sort of developed it together, expanded it from, you know, a film to a three-part series. We had a great partner in Mexico called Oscillated Media Production Company, and we had a great director named Gabriel Serra, who's an Oscar-nominated director, did a great short film. He's actually Nicaraguan. So we had all sort of all bases covered, the U.S., the Mexico side. We had a neutral sort of director, and we went to it. We brought the project to Amazon. You know, Matt Newman, who's the lead executive for Amazon Sports, Marie Donahue, they said yes, and we went off to the races. And this is really in March. So, you know, really in a span of 6 to 8 months, we created what I hope people think is really the definitive documentary project to date on U.S. men's soccer history and focused through this rivalry with Mexico, which, you know, in my opinion, others may disagree, is the most unique rivalry in international soccer. There may be others that are more intense that have had in terms of on-field history, and there are other rivalries like England, Germany that have had, you know, political history, but none combine the sporting element, the political element, a cultural element, and really a demographic element. You know, I mean, there are 30 million Mexicans living in the United States. There are not 30 million Brazilians living in Argentina or 30 million Germans living in England wondering which team to support. So all of that really makes this one really rich as a storytelling, you know, possibility.
Yeah. Some might think that this rivalry between the United States and Mexico is fairly new because the U.S. has had some victories in some major soccer tournaments over the last couple of years. But this is really a deep-rooted rivalry, as deep as it gets in world soccer.
Yeah.
And why is it so deep-rooted and so multidimensional?
Well, look, the people think that soccer sort of just arrived. I mean, the reality is we've been, you know, the United States has been playing in international tournaments since the 30s. But obviously, you know, for a variety of reasons, the game never took hold in the same way in the United States that it did elsewhere, not because it didn't have a history. There's a rich history of soccer in the United States. It's just sort of in the post-war period, we, the United States, embraced our games, baseball, basketball, and American football. But I think one of the reasons that this story is unique is it has to do with the placement of the United States in the world, right? We're a superpower. And when it comes to this part of the world, the region we live in, you know, there's always been this imbalanced relationship between the United States and Mexico in the sense that we were politically more mighty, economically more mighty, and culturally more, except in one area, soccer. In that sphere, Mexico was dominant. We were in the uncomfortable and unfamiliar position of being, you know, the last kid picked on the playground. You know, we were the absolute, they beat us to smithereens for basically 100 years. And so you can't have a rivalry until both teams start winning. And then once, you know, the United States started taking the game more seriously, we got the World Cup in 1994, we qualified for a World Cup, then it started to become more of a rivalry. And it really reaches its peak in a certain kind of way at the 2002 World Cup, which is in episode 2 of our series, where, you know, the United States competes against Mexico in the second round of the World Cup. I mean, you cannot get a bigger stage than that. There's a great line that Landon Donovan, who's really one of the key voices in the film, a key character, and he says, you know, you could go 100, 200, 500, 1,000 years, and the U.S. might never play Mexico again in the World Cup just because of the nature of the event. And so that was huge. And the United States beat Mexico on the World Cup, and that was a big deal. And so, you know, all of these elements, combined with, let's face it, the attitude many American politicians have had over the years, by the way, on both sides, towards Mexico. And then, you know, you have a really interesting area that we focus on in the third episode, where you have now a generation or two of Mexican-Americans. These are American citizens born in the United States to Mexican parents or grandparents who, because of the way that international soccer works, are eligible to play for both nations. And how do you make that choice? Very, very interesting. So, you know, all of those elements, and then we kind of like to really focus on the personal human stories. And in our series, really the two big focal points are Landon Donovan for the United States and Rafa Márquez for Mexico. These were really the symbols of their country's respective soccer cultures.
Good rivals. A look at a very deep-rooted and amazing rivalry between the U.S. men's and Mexico men's soccer team, which, of course, is time to focus on this year's World Cup men's soccer tournament going on right now in Qatar. That show premieres in three parts tomorrow, Thanksgiving Day, on Prime Video, available on smart TV sets and smart devices all over the place. It's also the debut of Skydance Sports, the sports TV venture put together by the folks behind Top Gun Maverick, other great films, and great TV shows as well. And that's the organization, by the way, that last week made a big deal with the National Football League to co-produce both scripted and unscripted shows. We'll talk about that deal and other things that Skydance is dealing with in the sports vein a little later on our conversation. We're speaking with executive producer John Weinbach. He joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised on this day before Thanksgiving 2022. Wherever you are, I hope you are getting ready for a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend. That starts tomorrow. Simon Apple with you live from New York, 54 degrees, top of the hour here in the Big Apple. If you have a question or a comment for John, don't be shy. Make that phone ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Monday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have the executive producer of ABC's hit series around this time of year, The Great Christmas Life Fight, going into its 10th season next Monday night. Brady Connell, the executive producer, will join us. Also, we'll have the vice president of Fine Art Auction Channel, one of the more unique smart TV distributed ventures to come along in quite a while. Mark Bronson will join us live, I believe, from Atlanta. That's next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And one more time, our special edition this Friday, day after Thanksgiving, comes your way with the people from Telemundo Deportes, Telemundo Sports, live from the World Cup in Qatar, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. And on our second half hour, yes, we'll be on for an hour, we will get off of this question. What are TV viewers, or what should TV viewers be thankful for this Thanksgiving season? And you'll have an opportunity to weigh in. I'll have my thoughts. You weigh in with your thoughts by phone or chat room. That's all Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific, our first ever morning edition of Tomorrow Be Televised, this day after Thanksgiving. What was the most surprising thing in researching and putting this docuseries together that came across your way?
A couple elements. I mean, I would say two really stand out. One is, I mentioned, you know, Landon Donovan, who, for those who don't know, obviously was, you know, the top American player, arguably the greatest player America's produced, you know, debuted in the early 2000s and played, you know, the national team through, you know, almost 2014. He was incredibly candid, excuse me, vulnerable, insightful about not only his own career, but the rivalry with Mexico. I mean, this is a guy who grew up, you know, very modestly in the outskirts of L.A., but really in a Latino milieu around, you know, Mexican kids. And I don't think people know that. They see the name Landon Donovan and they think, oh, my God, he must – or they look at the way he looks or what have you, make assumptions that he must be, you know, some upper middle class, you know, white guy from the suburbs. He really was not. And he was really forthcoming about how important and personal the rivalry was to him for reasons that went beyond soccer and also the reasons why he stepped away from the game prior to the 2014 World Cup. And then, you know, he had a real mental health crisis and then was cut by Jurgen Klinsmann when everybody expected him to go to the World Cup. So that was really interesting. And I think, you know, on the flip side for Mexico, with Rafa Márquez, I did not know the story that we get into in episode one, which is that, you know, his grandfather had abandoned their family to move to the United States. And that left, you know, a quite serious wound, you know, for him and for his father and their family, all as it related to the United States. So it was very personal for him when they played the United States. And he had this history of kind of acting out in games. He got a red card in the World Cup. He got, I think, more than one red card in games against the United States. And so you wonder, how is this guy who's, you know, Rafa Márquez was a starting, you know, anchor of the defense of Barcelona, of Lionel Messi, and all these great teams, you know, iconic teams, known for being calm and cool. And yet when he would play against the United States, he would lose his mind. And there were deep-seated reasons for that. So I did not know that before we did the project. And those are just a couple of the really interesting anecdotes that we are able to tell in the series.
Any concerns that other key subjects, whether players or coaches, for the United States and Mexico would not be as forthcoming, would not be as candid?
We certainly had those concerns. I mean, I think thankfully they did not come to pass. I mean, I think everyone was really open, and I think partly because, you know, we're at a stage now in the relations between the countries, certainly in the soccer sense, where there's a lot of collaboration. I mean, you know, we're going to host the next World Cup with Mexico and, by the way, Canada in 2026. In Major League Soccer and Liga MX, which is the top league in Mexico, they're going to play a very unique tournament starting next year where all the teams in MLS and all the teams in Liga MX are going to compete in sort of like, you know, a March Madness-style tournament. So there's a lot more cross-pollination in the soccer sense between the two countries, whereas before there was not much. So I think everyone on both sides sort of acknowledges that, hey, this is a shared history and it's a rich one, and we should not be insecure about telling that story. We don't have to be so meek and about, you know, telling our own history in the same way that England does, in the same way that Germany does, France, Brazil, Argentina, etc. So you know, I mean, I think we were lucky that and we had some great, you know, producerial work from a guy named Shaw Brown, who's a deeply experienced producer, and Grant Wall, who, you know, in my estimation is, you know, premier soccer journalist in the United States, helped us connect us to the tippy top voices on both sides. And that was important to get both perspectives.
As a soccer fan, as well as a TV producer, what's your sense about the state of soccer and your thoughts about the World Cup so far?
Oh man, I was heartbroken that we didn't, the United States did not beat Wales. Deserved to win, let it go. And Canada, too, by the way, was a dynamic team at the World Cup, and they just lost today. I mean, I think, look, as someone who – I'm a former intern at Major League Soccer. I've been beating the drum about soccer and the stories, not just in the United States, that it has to tell. So I'm a believer in it. But I do think, you know, before maybe even 10, 15 years ago, it was like just naive optimism. I think now there's a lot of signals in the marketplace that, you know, soccer in the United States is no longer something that you have to sort of defend or rationalize supporting. Oh, we have a domestic league that has, you know, some of the most, not only wealthy, but also really entrepreneurial and visionary owners in all of the sports world are in Major League Soccer. It's rapidly expanding. And I think that, you know, the women's game, the fact that we are the home of the greatest women's players in the world is another, you know, element that propels the game forward. Will it eclipse the NFL? No. Can it eclipse the NBA? Probably not. Can it be on par maybe with Major League Baseball? I don't think that's unrealistic. I really don't. And I'm someone who loves baseball. Can it eclipse the NHL? I think so, given its international reach and the fact that it's so accessible, you know, all over the country. So, you know, that's what's the metric for success? Is it awareness? Is it the value of the franchises? Is it just generally, you know, the idea that soccer is a big sport in the United States? In what number? I don't know. But I think that's absolutely on the horizon. And the fact that the next World Cup is going to be here, I think it's going to send it to another level.
Yes, absolutely. The fact that we're going to see the next World Cup 2026 in the United States, as well as Canada, Mexico, is very big. I do think, as a big soccer fan myself, and I made this comment on Sports Newswire, the sports news daily sports show on Sports Grid, that there's two things I think the sport has to do to really make it with United States fans. Number one, they've got to explain the offside rule. This offside rule is just – nobody seems to explain it. The opening game with Qatar and Ecuador had one of the most brilliant goals I've ever seen off the bat. Ecuador scored a goal. It was a scissor kick to a header to the goal. And it was taken away from them, and nobody's ever explained what it is. That's one. Number two, we cannot determine games on penalty kicks. I'm sorry. It is like saying we have to resolve the World Series with a home run derby contest. We have to resolve the Super Bowl with a punt, pass, and kick competition. It just seems to leave a bad taste in everybody's mouth, the player's mouth, the viewer's mouth, the fan's mouth, so on and so forth. Why can't we have a situation where you do an overtime, if the game is tied in regulation, and we're talking about the knockout rounds on, Just have the team stay on the field, and the first one that scores wins. Why this extra time deal? Why this penalty kick deal? Any thoughts about that?
Well, I think let's talk about the offsides rule. I mean, look, this is one that people have been talking about forever. I have my own crazy rule, a crazy idea, which is I think there should be no offsides for balls that are struck. Like, imagine having a blue line. In other words, there should be the field should be put in thirds. And once the ball is past the sort of offensive third, there's no offsides. Meaning, imagine if you're a hockey rink, right? So once you're inside the blue line, there can be no offsides. Something like that for soccer, where it's crazy to me that you can have an offsides, you know, when you're that close to the goal. But, you know, this is something that they might experiment with. The penalty kick issue is tough because at a certain point, these guys are exhausted. So the play really suffers if you continue playing. What I don't understand is why they did away with the golden goal rule, which is, you know, basically sudden death overtime, which I always thought was brilliant. It's one of the best things about, let's say, playoff hockey, right? You score, you win, everybody goes crazy. They did away with that. I think if you had a golden goal situation, which they had for many years, I think it would encourage teams to try to score more. But, you know, until you come up with something better, I just think also imagine in the nature of tournament play, right, if you had in a World Cup, if you literally had teams going into, like, quintuple overtime, they would be at a decided disadvantage in their next game. And so that seems unfair. And so at a certain point, it's like tiebreakers in tennis. At a certain point, you have to determine a winner.
Hey, you raised some fantastic points, John. And I thought, by the way, the Major League Soccer Cup, MLS Cup this several weeks ago, which was a marvelous game, got screwed by penalty kicks. If they had done just a sudden victory overtime, Philadelphia would have won the game 3-2. And that's the problem with extra time, that if one team scores, you have to do these two overtime, these 15-minute overtime periods, so the other team can score again. It's like that sort of like, you know, takes away the whole thing of the game. If you have sudden victory overtime where one team scores, they win. I think it heightens the play.
Yeah.
Personally, I think it would heighten the play. It would heighten the fan interest because they would know, hey, we got to get moving to score here.
Yeah. Oh, I think golden goal should come back. And I think that,
you
know, it was a part of the game for a while, and then for whatever reason, they took it away. But, listen, I've been fortunate to go to some really fantastic sporting events in my life. I ran onto the floor in 1987 when the Lakers beat the Celtics. I went to a World Series game in 1988 as a kid. I've been an LAFC season ticket holder since before the team started. Quite invested emotionally in that team as well. And that MLS Cup final against Philadelphia, it's as good, if not better, than any sporting event I've been to ever. I mean, it was a quite spectacular game. So, no, it's great to hear that you like it, with, you know, penalties aside.
Yeah. And by the way, I went to the last World Cup in the United States. I went to a game at MetLife Stadium. There was a game with, I think it was the semifinal with Germany and Bulgaria, and Bulgaria won the game 2-1 on a header, which was right in front of me. It was the reaction was just absolutely incredible. Header in, boom. It was like peace in our time.
Yeah.
I love the game. And by the way, I think both Fox and Telemundo, their announcers on the World Cup coverage so far have been fantastic. John Strong, I think, is one of the great new voices in soccer. And, of course, Andres Cantor and what he's doing and his fellow play-by-play people. And, by the way, for the first time, Telemundo is also using women on some of the games as commentators, at least two. Great for them. They're very good. And also their hosts, Anna Jerka and this new woman, Carolina, who does the Premier League games on Telemundo when NBC does the games in English or USA. Terrific team. I just think the coverage has been fantastic. The sky shots on corner kicks, the overhead shots on corner kicks and so forth, really a great move.
Yeah, well, look, you mentioned about, you know, sort of soccer in America. Let's not be naive. The fact of the matter is the World Cup is a sort of benchmark for how countries are doing in soccer, and that's why it was so significant that we did not make the World Cup last time in 2018, which was such a setback. And it's why, look, we have whatever people may think of, you know, Christian Pulisic or Gio Reyna or whatever, the reality is we have a cohort of players now who are, you know, really playing at the top levels. Are they the most important players on their teams? No, but they are playing. And this, we haven't had that as a country. And it does matter that, at the very least, the United States makes a competitive showing at the World Cup. Hopefully they can get out of the group because that it you're all you're you know it's a unique platform. The whole world is watching, and
yeah, absolutely. And I think that game Friday, England, United States. By the way, the Argentine South Saudi Arabia game, just amazing. So we may be seeing some changing of the guard. That's what is great about the World Cup. All these wonderful trends and storylines all over the place. Before you go, Skydance Sports, this is your first big TV effort. What else is coming? And what's your thoughts about the NFL deal that was announced last week?
Well, that was a quite significant announcement. It's very exciting. We launched Skydance Sports about a year ago, a little over a year ago, and with the goal to become, you know, the small ambitions to the best sports content studio in the world across, you know, sort of premium scripted and unscripted, and you know, huge support from David Ellison, the founder of the company, and Jesse Siskold, our president and COO. And so, look, the idea there is it's an investment with the NFL. We'll be partners with them on a range, not just football content, but non-football as well. And obviously, it's an enormously valuable relationship to produce football-related content. So, you know, a lot to be determined, but enormously exciting. In terms of, you know, our upcoming productions, we have this Good Rivals one. We have a very exciting film, still untitled, but it's about the origin of the Air Jordan brand. About the journey of Sonny Vaccaro, who was, you know, one of the real forefathers of sort of the modern sneaker and basketball sneaker business, his journey and the team around him at Nike to sign Michael Jordan and create the Air Jordan brand. And it's you know, sort of a dream project. It's you know, I had co-directed a documentary about Sonny for ESPN as a 30 for 30, and to have Ben Affleck directing, Ben Affleck starring as Phil Knight, Matt Damon starring as Sonny Vaccaro, Viola Davis playing Michael Jordan's mother, and Jason Bateman playing a guy named Rob Strasser, who was the vice president of marketing at Nike. It's pretty much a dream come true, or enormously exciting. And that'll be coming out also on Amazon, probably in some theatrical distribution as well at some point early next year.
Great. And Good Rivals, the first effort from Skydance Sports, premieres tomorrow, Thanksgiving Day, on Prime Video, available on smart TV sets and smart TVs all over the place. For more details, go to primevideo.com. That's Good Rivals. Tomorrow, Thanksgiving Day, the first of what we hope will be many, many TV projects from Skydance Sports, especially with some of the great partnerships that they're involved with, including the National Football League. John Weinbach, executive producer of Good Rivals, thank you for joining us. Congratulations on making this wonderful presentation, beautifully timed as well. Have a great Thanksgiving, you and all your Skydance crew and the Prime Video crew as well, and you all the very best. It's been a pleasure having you on today.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it. Have a great holiday.
You too. All the greatest. Take care. John Weinbach joining us live from Los Angeles. Thanks to all of our guests, all of you for tuning in. We're back on Friday. Remember, 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, the people from Telemundo Deportes live from the World Cup in Qatar. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Andy Cho is BTR General Manager. Jay Sonnenberg is Head of Content. For tomorrow we televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. All of us at Blog Talk Radio, SpeakerTune Radio, our podcast affiliates on Podium.com. Wish you and your family and friends a marvelous start of your holiday season, a great Thanksgiving tomorrow, and a wonderful weekend. Wherever you got to go, please make sure you give extra time. Take care. And we'll be back again with our special edition Friday, day after. That's 9 a.m. Eastern, 6 a.m. Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker and TuneIn Radio. We're going live to the World Cup in Qatar. Whatever you're doing between now and then, please make it safe and make it great now more than ever. Again, have a fantastic beginning of your Thanksgiving and your holiday weekend and holiday season as well. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.